Welcome to Expedition Self on Om Times Radio with lifelong learner, entrepreneur, and creator of the worlds of Expedition Self, Sam Parado. Sam shares 4 decades of studying, guiding, and teaching how to go inside so we can build an incredibly powerful, dynamic, and validating relationship with the self. Expedition Self is laced with stellar, unexpected insights about what it means to be human. Listen now and ignite your self-development process with Sam Parado.
Well, hello and welcome to Expedition Self. I'm Sam Parado. And tonight we're going to be talking about the possibility of state-of-the-art collaboration. I don't think it's my typical title and kind of focus, but I don't know. But when I start pondering kind of what the weekly show is about, this is really what showed up for me. And as I was thinking about it, I've noticed that there's a change in the world, in my work, and in the nature of conversations over the last 5 years. And I think some of what's changing is credited to the up-and-coming generations and the way that they view life and the way they see the world working and the things that they care about and that they want different ways to operate in life. And some of the change, I think, is because people in older generations like me are recognizing that things aren't working and ways that we might have gotten something done 20 years ago, it doesn't work the same now. They don't get done. Or there's a fallout from the way we work. So while I think things are changing, at the moment, they're also still staying the same because people are essentially still people. And this is why I wanted to do a show about it. You know, this to explore the interface between both, this idea that something's shifting, and of course, we're still human. So to deal with the coming age, we're going to have to really understand how to advance our quality of human engagement, how to recognize stagnant patterns, and how to be the person at the table who says, hey, we can do it differently. Or I'm seeing more of these opportunities every day, and it's one of the few places that cause me to feel hopeful right now as I look around my life and look at what's happening in the world. I know people always talk about how history repeats itself, but I have this sense that we're going to make a jump in terms of our actual human capacity to be with ourselves in the coming years. So anyway, I'm glad you're here. This is a call-in show, so feel free to call in and talk about your process of going inside, which might have nothing to do with what I'm talking about tonight, or you can comment on the things I'm sharing. Really, anything you like, I would love to hear from you. The number is 202-570-7057. And if you happen to be listening to my show at a time other than when I'm live, which is Tuesday at 8 p.m., I'm telling you that so that you can actually listen live. And also, if you ever want to write me about anything that I talk about, you can write me at hello@expeditionself.com. All right. So I'd like to paint a scene for you. A group of people are gathered. Let's say there are 6. And each of those people brings every moment of every day of their life to this engagement. Some, a few, a couple, are committed to looking at their truth, right? To being in touch with themselves, to being conscious. And others are not. Some are afraid of their truths and act accordingly, right? They kind of shift and direct the conversation to avoid what they're afraid of. And of course, some are not. We'll dive into anything. Some of this 6 group like to be direct, and some do their very best to avoid being pinned down. And then add to the mix that they have some history with each other, and they have situations and events that probably didn't get worked through, so they're left with some taste in their mouth from those. These six people mostly want to get along and work together, and they mostly want some outcome that fits into their vision in some way. And a lot of their hidden motivations, like wanting to be important or wanting to be smart or whatever it is that drives them through every day, are largely kept in secret. This is a gathering. This is a family gathering. This is a meeting in a company. And at one time, it would have seemed completely normal to leave well enough alone, to let the loudest voice carry the conversation and or the quietest voices working behind the scenes to get their needs met. At some time in the past, it would have been acceptable and normal and probably even more comfortable to leave the deeper motives 10 feet under and just go for conformity as a way to find agreement and alignment and smiles and high fives. Previously, the need for harmony in the group would have overridden the need for someone to express their truth as an individual if it caused disruption. So even though many gatherings and meetings still go with the idea that the power dynamics dictate the process and the interactions, within every group now, I think there is someone who is saying, hey, I don't think this really works. Now, I know we're still talking about a group of six, but for a moment, I'd like you to think about you and your own family. Think about you in your job. Think about your various communities you participate in. Perhaps you have a friend group that you spend a lot of time with. And then it can even get smaller. You and your sister. You and your significant other. You and two friends. So zero in on just one person. One person that you're in relationship with. Because I'll bet when I said the word collaboration, and then of course I talked about the group, you were thinking that that meant like working in a team to try to get something done. And it definitely does. But it also has to do with how you connect one-to-one with anybody. So we're going to walk along the four sides that I think belong in every collaboration. And I'm going to ask you questions to help frame it up. Okay, you ready? Okay. Here we are. How much of your truth, of your feelings, and your needs are you willing to speak into, to give a voice, to give sound? And how often do you do this? So this is side one of the box. How much of your truth and your feelings and your needs are you willing to speak into, and how often do you do this? Now, right now I'm asking you, just think about one person. Now, if you find yourself in a group, that's okay too, but this is what you're visualizing. Okay, here's the second side of the box. How dominated or dominating, I know this is a big word, do you feel when it comes to interactions about an undertaking or finding agreement on a topic? And what that means is how much force, how much intensity, how much push. That's what I mean when I say dominated or dominating. Do you feel when it comes to in an interaction about an undertaking or finding agreement on a topic, right? You're working with somebody, deciding what movie you're going to go see. It can be as simple as that, right? or you're working on something and you're trying to pull off an event or build something to the next level or move from one house to another. Okay, that was the second side of the box. All right, here's the third. How much do you actually care about others' well-being and their needs being met at the same time yours are when you are taking action or trying to find agreement? How much do you care about their feelings and their needs and their come from at the same moment that you care about yours? Right? That's the trick, right? At the same moment. Okay, that was the third side. This is the fourth side of the box. To what degree are you willing to risk disagreement or discomfort to work together or interact in a way that allows for more humanness, like emotion or stirring up someone's hidden unspoken agenda or accepting people's level of commitment, right? How much are you willing to talk about those things? That's the fourth side of the box. So if you answer these questions, this is the level at which you play. Now, you may be somebody that really doesn't even think about collaboration in this way. You might be someone who you just have relationships and you enjoy them and you take them for what they are. But remember, this conversation is about this idea of state of the art. And it's about state of the art because it's about preparing and engaging and hanging in pace, staying in pace with what's changing, what's evolving and emerging around us about the way we're going to get things done and the way we're going to connect and the way we're going to relate. This is kind of a futuristic conversation in its own way. See, I engage in all sorts of relationships and gatherings, and the thing that's changed is that I'm not the only one trying to raise the bar anymore. And it actually goes further than that. I now have people who see things about who I'm being, who take those risks with me, who talk to me about their feelings at moments when I'm in the dominant, forceful, pushy space, right? That raises my bar, right? Someone will now say to me, your heart just wasn't present, right? It's not the way I usually sense you. Or it felt like you were trying to, you know, sell me or compel me to your side. Okay, this didn't used to happen. Oh, I'm not saying I wasn't doing those things before, right? Or that others weren't actually registering them. But before, they were committed to pulling the same power levels. And so to call it out was to validate it, right, for them, for themselves back then, which, again, if that was the modus operandi, that's the way we all worked, right? We didn't call one thing out or another. We just engaged in the same dynamic. See, before it was considered to be the standard rule of engagement. And the rare person who I have met many of them over the years, but that rare person who had an ability to be innately collaborative would meekly offer some alternative every 180th time of gathering, and it might be heard and maybe considered, right? Because we get locked up in these systems that keep us constrained and limited, and they maintain these norms, the standard ways of being. So that's why state of the art is so important, because state of the art attempts to break out of those routines, those patterns. Now, I do want to say it's true that when we're triggered in some way, when we think our needs are at risk, like the idea that we'll be ghosted if we say the wrong thing, or that we'll be left out of the next meeting if someone doesn't approve of what we contributed. Well, when we're triggered in some way, we do everything in our power to influence this not happening. you know, not being left out is a super powerful motivator, right? Wanting to feel essential, like I mean something and I have some value and I'm important. These things are a big deal to us humans. And probably, you know, at the top of the list is, you know, wanting others to like us, right? And approve of us, right? Wanting to be welcomed, right? Because somebody feels like there's an affection, right? Or a regard between us. That's a big deal. And of course, within society in the past, the way you dealt with this was to land on like a seemingly effective behavior and then to make sure you manage the outcome through a strategy, some kind of strategy. If I say this, then this will happen. If I don't speak now, this will happen. If I take a side, if I pick a side, well, then that'll happen, right? So that you'll be liked and invited to the next outing or meeting so that you get it, whatever it is that you're wanting, right? You get your way, right? Or you get to feel good. You know, dare I say, we unknowingly, you know, manipulate our behaviors and way of being to generate a particular outcome with the people we wanted to hang with. And this is important: dominance and influencing skills and withholding and positioning and speechifying. They were the tools of the trade. They were the tools that we've been able to hone and perfect up to this point. They were normal. They were expected, right? They even, like, if you showed up and you didn't know how to bring that to the moment, it's likely you felt like you didn't belong, like out of place, awkward. This is where we're coming from. Okay, we'll continue on this conversation when we come back from break.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour,
if you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind,
walk a mile in my shoes,
walk a mile in my shoes,
walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out, and for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
All right. Well, we are back, and I'm Sam Prado. You're listening to Expedition Self. We're talking about the possibility of state-of-the-art collaboration. And before I went to break, I was really trying to talk about what has been so about this collaboration up to this point, like what the norms have been. And it turns out I have a caller, and I'm excited. So, Diane, what did you want to share with me and our audience?
Yes, I will. First of all, I think the three questions you ask as to how you should think about it or how do you feel really hit me, because one of the questions you said, well, how much are you willing to talk about it and how often? And this would be what I would say would apply for even your other two questions. I find that I don't know the right words to say, to talk about it, so that it doesn't activate the person in the wrong way. I don't have the vocabulary to say it in a loving way if I'm already activated. Does that make any sense?
Oh, totally. It's one of those things that's happening like inside the clamp of the stomach, right? You have
right.
You have something going on, and then the way it wants to come out feels like it's not actually going to be supportive or feel like it's constructive.
Right. And then when you say, how much am I willing to risk? I if they get mad or upset, I am risking a lot. If I don't keep my self intact, you know, and the only way I feel like I could do that is if I knew the words to say to keep it on a, I don't even know if it's the right word, but the even plane, so that we could work it out.
Yeah. You know, I just want to say that, you know, earlier I was talking about there's this person that's starting to know, right, that something's not going well. Like, and it sounds like that's step one is you're noticing something's not working in the conversation, or something needs to be talked about that would go deeper. That really is step one, right? Mm-hmm. And then step two, when you say, I don't really know the words, I would say, and I find myself in this conversation a lot with people, and I'm not sure I describe it very well. The key is to actually talk about how do we create an environment where I can do this? Like you actually, that's part of the conversation. Hey, I'd like to be able to share more of these kinds of things, or I'd like us to talk about this in a different way. Would you be willing, or what does that bring up for you? So you, it's kind of like you set the stage for recognizing, especially when you're learning, right? Especially when you're practicing, because otherwise, right, you don't even, and I'm going to talk some more about agreement later, but you don't end up getting agreement that you're going to be doing something different.
Or that they're willing to participate.
Exactly.
Okay.
Which can you get that actually is collaboration right there?
Yes, I can.
Okay, that's exactly the idea, but it's so hard because it's broken down into such a little spot, right? It's a singular moment. But in that moment, you're agreeing actually to collaborate by inviting them to come with you in a different place.
Right. Thank you so much. That gives me something to work on.
Well, thank you so much. What an awesome question and sharing you gave. Have a great day.
I'll keep on listening. I will.
Thank you. Okay. Gosh, that's always so much fun when we get a caller. And I haven't gotten to talk to Diana in a while. She has called in a number of times. All right. So here's where we're at. So we're talking about this word of collaboration. So now I just want to shift gears just a little bit and ask you this question. In your opinion, do you think we still debate the value of good communication or the effects when good communication is missing? So that was kind of a rhetorical question, because I'm going to tell you, I don't think we do debate it so much. And I think in a group of six, it's likely at this point that four of those people will acknowledge how important communication is. So, but if you speak about collaboration, it's not there yet. And I would venture to say that of those six people, only one of them is really bringing a consciousness to the exchanges that's rooted in truly working alongside and caring about everyone's experience. You see, collaboration doesn't fit with capitalism so well. You know, and maybe it's not just capitalism, but this idea of drive and push, right? Make something happen and prove that you can be that someone, right? That cowboy mentality, the strongest survives, the entrepreneurial idea that anyone can make it if they're determined and tenacious and driven and enough, right? The individual is numero uno in our society, you know, the strong, capable individual, right? And the leaders get the credit, the captain of the football team, right? The is the hot one, the owner of the business, you know, the best actress. We're living in an enigmatic time because the raising up of individual accomplishments is beginning to see diminishing returns, right? It's seeing the limitations of itself. And people are starting to wonder how they're going to find their way through. How are we going to find our way through all these disagreements on a very grand scale? How are we going to create a different way of working together, collaborating right within our own families? And I guess what I'm saying is collaboration is the next big thing. It is. And for most of us, it will bump up against our need to succeed, our sense of relying on our own survival skills, our need to win, and our desire to get things done that matter most to us. So when I was a little girl, the things that mattered most to me were the grades I got, or the contest I won, or the game, right, that I outdid everybody that was playing. And when I got to say how it went, when I got my way. And if you coupled that with my lack of security, then it started to shape into things like I went out and made money and I got that scholarship. And although there was always this underlying conversation, right, when I was very involved in 4-H or even in some social settings, like, oh, let's make sure we share. By the way, I didn't like to share, you know, and even at home, right, like, oh, let's think about how everybody's feeling about things. But most of the time, no one was actually teaching collaboration. They weren't teaching me how to connect to myself and speak from that place. Some of it was there was no emotional language, but other parts it was just, what do you do with your own personal needs if you're supposed to collaborate? Well, since people are really not watching us every minute of the day, well, you just figure out how to get your needs met, right? Because they were teaching me how to survive, and being successful in some way or another meant that I would survive. Of course, you know, where all my inner stuff went is a story for another show. But when I got into my first business experience, I'm not, you know, when I say all this, it's not like I'm sitting here, you know, spouting it off like with pride, but I want to share it with you because I think it's all part of my own journey to get to this place where I'm recognizing collaboration as the new thing. But the only thing that mattered to me was closing the deal. And the other person who sat across the table from me was, dare I, like, simply a responder, right, to my amazing, talented influencing skills. And there was no collaboration in this. I wasn't really deeply concerned about their needs, right? Because at some level, it was all about me, being the one who made it happen, the source of it, the font, the fountain of incredible self-origination, you know. Others' needs were only important to the extent that it furthered my ultimate goal, right? I intended it all, and so that's how it went. And at the time, I was fully embodied by the idea of, not that I was aware of this exactly, but proving myself worthy, right? That I was good enough and I was capable and I was strong and I was talented. And I think this is what's beginning to change, because I don't think I was all that unique. Whether it was a bigger piece of the pie or a smaller piece of the pie, I really believe that this is inside of all of us. See, others in my generation are the beneficiaries of new thinking, of self-development, and responding to a more and like open and communicative world, right? That focus on communication over the last 30 years has made a difference. And at the same time, people from younger generations are able to see that it doesn't have to be just about the one, that the feeling of community and co-working and social connection produces a very, very different outcome. Collaboration is the new skill to acquire. It's a new way to operate. It's the commitment that will bring us to this next plateau or this next mesa of our evolution. And I don't think it's easy. So I'd like to take a moment to talk about our need for harmony. Harmony isn't going to help us to become more collaborative, other than being a sign that our heart wants to get along, right? Harmony, for most of us, it serves as kind of a way station to bypass the messy, the unpredictable, the truths, right? And feeling and the differences. And of course, the opposite, it doesn't serve us either. To be someone who is, you know, revving up for a fight, someone who looks for differences, who seeks out misalignments and conflicts and wants to inflame them. Really, that's just the other side of the continuum. What lies in the center of harmony on one side and conflict creating on the other is three things. It's what I think is in the center. So the first one is acknowledgement that we can't know all that's at play in ourselves. And for those of you who listen to my show, this will not be a new concept, right? There's a humility, a kind of humbleness, a self-awareness of being that we're incomplete and that we want to see what we can't see, that there is an unconscious, that we have blind spots. It's a recognition that we are not all-knowing and that we're not always right. That's one. Two is there's a desire to include others' experience, that there's a desire to learn about others. There's an interest in it and to pay attention and to want to find ways to deepen that connection. Now, these things that I'm saying here, I'm on the second one. They're just words and there's a couple of sentences, but they're really huge. They're super huge inside of our own relationship with ourselves. These are things we want to be cultivating within us. And then the third thing is an investment and commitment in moving through things, in being constructive, in learning how to get things done. It's kind of like, and this may not seem like it fits. It may seem like it's incongruous. But what happens is when you go to work on creating like a center place for collaboration, you can get stuck there because those feelings can take you over, right? You can become immersed in them. So having an investment of how do we work together? How do we come to agreement? How do I say this when Diane called in so that it's true, but it's also helpful, helps us get to the next place. This is a really, really important kind of internal place to come from. Now, when you work from these three places, it will bring fear to the surface for you and other people. It'll empower people to say the difficult things that lie inside of their truth. And it'll create a safer environment that's based on messy things rather than just those things that seem acceptable. And it'll highlight moments when someone has an individual need, and then you'll spend necessary time to work through whatever that is, because it lessens judgments and it helps us to embrace the whole of being human. And that will influence how we show up in all the circles of our lives, because that's really what happens, right? We live within our own circle. We live within circles around us, the ones that are close, and we live in ever widening circles, really. So collaboration is the new nucleus of human design. Again, what I just described was human design, like how we operate in ourselves, how we operate with others. Communication, agreement making, transparency, and acknowledgement of others' power and needs and significance will define relationships and groups that live into this new state of the art. Okay, so I put a lot of words in there, right? So we talked about communication, and we haven't talked about transparency yet. And this idea of acknowledging others' power, needs, and significance, we actually did talk about like that, right? Caring about what they're learning. So I found a quote from Charles Darwin. I'm going to read it right now. Okay, ready? Here we go. "It is the long history of humankind, and animal kind too, that those who learned to collaborate and improvise most effectively have prevailed." I thought, oh, that's a cool quote, right? That really works. So this last weekend, I went to the play Into the Woods by Stephen Sondheim. And it was so interesting because it focused on fairy tales and happily ever afters and our wishes. Basically, I'm not going to sound like the best critic here, you know, like that describes every detail, but it portrayed the fairy tales, but began to show the true story behind the tale, right? And what was really happening for the person in the role, for Rapunzel or for Cinderella or for Little Red Riding Hood. I have to say, I am always so surprised when some form of art just slices through my crusty brain and strikes a deeper chord. And I don't know why I'm surprised by it, because it happens all the time. But this chord was about this idea of collaboration. And it ties back to how we show up in groups or in relationship with someone, how we have traditionally shown up. All right. When we come back from break, I'm going to talk about what that is.
Dr. Carmen Hara is a renowned psychologist, intuitive.
Practical spiritual advice, and daily conscious exercises, world,
and empowering predictions.
IOM FM.
For you. Dr. Hara's
host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times
small,
Media, one of the
like
more recognized brand names in the conscious community,
power,
and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
You came across someone struggling with hunger. How would you recognize them? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited
for summer break because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet?
I am the one in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
All right. Well, hello. We're back. That was an interesting break. I think we were having two breaks in one. Anyway, I was talking about Into the Woods before we went on break, and you're listening to Expedition Self. I forgot to tell you about that. And the number is 202-570-7057. Anyway, what I was saying is that to me, that play had something to do with collaboration, and that is that when we're in relationship with someone or in a group, we have this vision for it, for how it will go, like a wish. And then we proceed to stop being real or stop being our fullest self. Well, think about it, right? Those needs to be liked, to be included, to go along, to maintain harmony. And maybe even our whole life story backs this up. We begin to withhold. Or we begin to have a certain mechanism or mannerism, right? that causes us to take over because some personal drive is working us hard behind the scenes. Well, so this used to be okay. It was good enough. It's how all groups function. It's the way we relate. It's how it goes for human beings. You know, I could tell the story of Wicked, of how the Wicked Witch of the West wasn't that at all. And the path that led Elphaba, the Wicked Witch of the West, to that fateful moment when she left her ruby slippers for Dorothy, well, things were not as they seemed. And so this is another difference that's occurred. Social media and the web of things have demanded more and more authenticity and transparency, right? In so many ways, we've been thrust into this larger melting pot, larger than we ever imagined before in our lives. The average circle of people you were connected with, right, as a grown adult prior to this phenomenon, probably included your family, some good friends, or your work crew, maybe an organization you belong to, and then some common acquaintances, like, you know, you saw them, you know, every day when you dropped your daughter off for school. I mean, let's just estimate maybe a total of 300 people. But now you can be connected to thousands. You can share your opinion, your activities, your lifestyle with people all across the globe. They can just simply push that DM message button and write you from a Bali or Paris or Stockholm, you know, like anywhere. And with this mass exposure, people have started to understand and ask for and define this idea of transparency, of showing who you really are, letting people see the whole of your humanness. And of course, with the increase of wanting that, there's also been more fakery. And now we're even dealing with AI that can create images and words that are so incredibly believable, you can barely tell they're not real. See, in this time, we have to recognize that what will make us great collaborators is being able to get to more and more of the truths. And that means that people are committed to being more transparent and authentic than they ever have in their entire lives. Another condition for this change that's happening, right? Because we're actually watching people be authentic and transparent. We're able to study it in a way on these screens in a way that we never could. We couldn't get that much time with people before to watch those kinds of things. Now, here's a little caveat about this, that I think people who are still locked into the old mindset are unprepared for. The more someone practices transparency and authenticity, well, the more they're going to spot when it's missing. Uh-oh. So now these people who are practicing are sitting in that meeting of six people and they're friends too, and they know how to bring it. And they know they want it. And they even have more communication skills to create it. This is the change that's afoot. So to realize this state-of-the-art collaboration, you're going to want to recommit yourself to being authentic and transparent and understand it more and more deeply. More robustness about it, right? And this is really hard because the only way to do this is to put the looking good at risk, to be willing to fail or to lose. And if we're going to do this, it means that you have to feel more solid and grounded and whole on the inside. Let me put a plug in for going inside right there, because that strength allows you to show up and practice and try things. It's a norm now. And even if it isn't a full norm in the circle, you know, the global conversation has made it a thing. It is now part of our collective narrative. And the technology to encircle you with not just 350, but 2,000 has made it so. Okay, so now I want to talk about agreements. So collaboration means that you're seeking agreement. And it used to make me crazy when someone would say to me, oh, we just have to agree to disagree. Oh my gosh, it would bunch me up instantaneously. And the reason for this is because at like the intimate relationship level, we're not agreed about topics and things. We want to keep taking in what's being said by others and adding it to what we think and letting it bump up against what we think and then coming up with some new way to perceive the world or that topic. Well, for a lot of people, they believe agreements are made because of opinions about something, when really all agreements are made emotionally. So when we're talking about being in a more collaborative world, it means we're going to have to understand the complexity of the emotional play that acts like the puppeteer with what we agree to and what we don't. So what lives on these layers? You might be asking yourself this very question. So the first one is insecurity. I agree to things or not based on how secure, comfortable, and safe I feel in myself and my life. The next one is appreciation and acknowledgement. I tend to say yes to things when I feel like I'm noticed and seen and that people appreciate who I am. The third one, belonging. I will agree to things that cause me to feel more a part of something, and I will not agree to things if I feel like no one cares that I'm there. Another one is justice. A lot of times I hear people hold back agreement if they think something is unfair. You know, it's a core place within. And unless it gets worked through, it's just not happening, you know. Another one is fatigue. Life is exhausting. The way we do life makes us tired. And we drive ourselves hard and I think we expect too much a lot of the times. So again, when I'm thinking about whether I'm going to agree, I just want to circle back to this. I'm saying that agreeing with things is often emotional in nature. It's being in nature. Okay, this next one's kind of interesting. Revenge and paybacks. People agree and don't agree to things because they're resentful, right? And they'll refuse to go in one direction or another. You know, you didn't do this with me, so I'm not doing it with you. The last time this happened, well, now I'm gonna. Right. And then the last one I'll suggest is the need to be different, original, or unique. Right. The sense that you're going to get swallowed up and consumed in some nameless, faceless group or conversation that you don't want your voice to be drowned out in. So right now, in just a moment, these are just the few of the reasons that I will or won't agree to something and things I've witnessed in others. And think about what it would take to work me through those kinds of interconnections if we're going to truly collaborate and not just run over the top and not just comply and not just defer or not just force the lead or run the show. If you're going to collaborate, then when I agree or don't agree, these are the additional conversations that would need to be explored or brought into the limelight. Now, can you think of some other reasons someone agrees or doesn't? What reasons maybe why you agree or don't? Something to consider is that lots of people who are in pursuit of harmony or going along to get along, whoops, that along word's getting me tonight, they won't even realize they're not agreeing. When you're trying to collaborate with someone, well, you're going to be limited by the degree to which they want to get what's going on at these deeper levels. And if they're not committed to doing this is going to go back to Diane's question. You didn't know it, but I was going to talk about it. Well, then you've got to begin with the idea of what does it take to collaborate? And that becomes your first collaboration, your first agreement. I often hear people say, no one in my group wants to work that hard. Or my spouse just isn't interested in talking about things like that. Right. But it's not going to remain this way. Think about how the focus on communication has infiltrated everyone's life to some extent. We all actually know the term passive aggressive. We also, right, we even have words like agile communication, conscious communication. Well, the elements of collaboration are going to do the same. So people who like to dominate or throw their weight around, that would be someone more like me, won't be responded to in the same way. Because people have choices to find other forums to work in or relate with. People who don't want to talk through issues in a transparent and authentic way will be engaged in conversations that end up causing them to drop the mask and lift the veil. We're in a new age, folks, and it's a power downshift for the individual and an accelerated ride for those who can start to see every person as not only having a voice, but needing to voice their inner world. These big differences out there, these big problems, I'm sure you all see, the only way they're going to be solved is by you touching someone else in a way that draws them towards a center where they're finding agreement through their humanness, not through the topic. And no, it's not for the faint-hearted. I can't tell you how many moments I've watched an opportunity to go for more be pushed to the side because it was too hard, or people weren't invested enough. No one wanted to make the time. Thousands of times. And I'll bet when you think about your friend, your family member, your small group, I bet you gloss right over chance after chance after chance. So right now, I just want you to think about someone who matters to you, someone you spend time with. Here's just some final questions for you to think about with that person. What are the ways, the methods that you influence each other? How do you decide what you're going to do together? And what matters when you do it? How often do you share your disappointments or feelings about how it's going? And when do you tell them that you're not in agreement? Like, do you sit down and explore what's going on with you? How much do you withhold? How often do you withhold? How much do you judge and then not talk about it? What resentments do you still hold on to? They never got out in the open. You are the embodiment of what's possible in this relationship. How much do you keep to yourself because you've decided they don't want to talk about it? And in any given exchange, do you watch for moments that cause you to feel disconnected or affect the openness of your heart? I looked up the meaning of collaboration, and this is what it said. It said the best way to define collaboration would be to outline it as the process of two or more people or organizations working together to complete a task or achieve a goal. I don't think they're going to be defining collaboration this way in the future because it's going to be the standard of how we relate together. And yes, it will still have something to do with working together, but it won't be limited to completing or achieving a task in the most functional sense. And when I hear people who have a real grasp on this idea, they can't imagine working in any other way. They would never dream of depriving people of being heard or bringing the intentions to the exchange. Why do it without it, right? So this is one of the benefits of the shakeup that happened because of COVID. We saw choices we didn't know we had before. And with that, it loosened up for so many people, the have to of their lives. This is the way we survive. We have to commute 2 hours every day to keep the job. We have to feel exhausted by the time we get to Friday every week. I don't know how it all comes out, but I can see evidence of new ways of working and working together emerging. And I see people saying, why am I in a family that doesn't want to talk about our experiences and feelings together? I don't think it has to be that way. For all the fear that's wrapped around every single day, I think we are also starting to think we have nothing to lose. We want to make it better, so we might as well try. For some, I'm the most amazing one. It isn't working for them in the same way anymore. It isn't producing results. And it's lonely. Okay, so on a personal note, I encourage you to think about how you take a step and then check in, and then take a step and check in, and then take a step and check in your friend, with your friends, in your family, in your groups. How you practice collaborating is slowing things down. And then to notice when you don't stop and check in, and when you don't talk about why that is. Remember, our need to be independent is very, very strong. And I think most people like to live in their own heads and feel that peace and satisfaction of meeting their own needs. I believe that without a strong sense of this independence, we couldn't even begin to move toward this interdependence, this sense of what collaboration could produce for us. But I know it doesn't make the entire thing any easier. Thank you so much for being with me this week in this conversation. And I hope you felt called to practice in your collaboration and hanging out in the new age as someone who is making a difference in all that.